Welcome to episode 359 of The Lab. I'm Brad Barton.
I'm Phil Barton.
This is one in our continuing series on language and communication. If you'd like to hear the other episodes, you can find them by visiting thelabwithbrad.com.
I don't know what to say. I'm about to cry.
The opening
music you gave me is...
I should have talked to you about that before. Speaking of communication.
Right? Are you all right? That's all right.
Before I forget,
mm-hmm.
I need to mention that there will be no episode next week
okay.
for Halloween, nor the following week
uh-huh.
via Veterans Day.
Oh, goodness. I don't know what to do with myself during... Well, that's
no,
a lie.
Listen to that song some more and just cry.
It's going to be a pity... Well, pity party. Sure, why not?
Right. Also, this is sort of a thumbnail. Mm-hmm. of stuff we covered in much more exhaustive detail. You can check out episodes 285 and 286,
mm-hmm.
which you can find by visiting thelabwithbrad.com.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
okay,
it's Germany.
Yes.
In the late 1700s.
All right, there we are.
And Uli Sendefield.
Goodness sakes.
Good Lord.
Is there an umlaut?
I looked up how to pronounce it, and I'm still having trouble. Oh, welcome to the lab.
Germans. That's right.
All right. Well, okay. His family business had been doing as well,
mm-hmm.
and his father expected him to follow in his footsteps.
Okay.
But he ran off.
Oh?
To become a lawyer.
He's like Buddha. Okay. Well, anyways, whoa, except for the lawyer parts.
That's the funny thing. His dad was a successful actor.
Well, oh.
He ran away from the theater to become a lawyer.
This is so backwards.
I know.
What is happening? Okay.
And so then his father died and his dream of being a lawyer was over.
Oh.
And so he came back to do the theater instead.
What? Okay. That's how it happened back then.
That's how it happened for this guy anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he got into being a playwright.
Yes.
And even though the plays and productions were doing rather well, he was going bankrupt just printing posters.
Oh, goodness. Okay.
That's when he started experimenting.
What's it take to print a poster?
Back in 1792?
Yeah.
Good question.
That's what I'm here for.
One of the available methods was to take a copper.
Uh-huh.
This is one of the things he started experimenting with.
Uh-huh.
And then use a grease-based paint.
Oh.
Paint what you want and then cover it in acid.
Okay.
And then put ink on that and then press it on the paper.
Thump, thump, thump.
It was a lot faster than copying them out over and over again by hand.
Okay, okay.
And he actually discovered that you could do the same thing with limestone
mm-hmm.
and a bit of paste, which
sounds
was
cheaper.
Way cheaper.
Yeah, sounds way cheaper. Yeah, yeah.
And in fact, with some experimentation and a lucky break with a friend who wanted to compose, print his musical scores,
oh.
he actually ended up making more money with his printing technique than he ever did with the theater.
I'm free of the theater. Now I can... Well, I've gotten into printing, you know.
So, you know, couldn't be a lawyer. At least he got paperwork down. It's called lithography, by the way.
For the limestone?
This whole thing. Okay. It's a weirdly pivotal invention,
mm-hmm.
which we'll talk about when we get there. But before we get there, we got to walk through a Halloween-like segment.
That's right.
Which we recorded on Monday.
Spooky.
Today's sponsors include ghosts, ghouls, and undead batteries.
Undead batteries?
Yes. Undead Wait. Batteries, in case you're tired of having your cell phone run out of juice just while you're in the middle of something,
mm-hmm.
and think your laptop should develop a taste for living flesh. Undead batteries, human souls sold separately.
Okay.
So we're coming up on Halloween.
Yes.
Not doing an episode during that week.
Spooky.
But, so this is as close as we get.
Okay.
And we were talking about how we got our modern communication.
Mm-hmm.
Large part of that story is just how we figured out electricity.
Oh, okay.
As it happens,
mm-hmm.
you're electric.
I am.
Yes.
So
am I.
Okay, right.
Every cell in your body actually keeps a small electric charge between itself, its cytoplasm,
mm-hmm.
and the what would you call that? The rest of it. The goo, the liquid, the outside.
plasma. Juice. We're full of juice.
I really planned this out today.
Is that the, what's it called, lipid membrane?
Yes, across the lipid membrane. Keep a little charge. It's necessary to keep various things ticking over
mm-hmm.
like they need to,
mm-hmm.
or we're dead.
Right. That would be inconvenient.
They noticed a link between electricity and living things, from things like the electric eel or electric rays, especially one called the torpedo fish.
Ooh.
And actually, the underwater torpedoes, the munitions,
yes,
they're named after the fish.
Oh, you're kidding. Though okay.
It's not a fish. It's a ray. I don't get it. But I guess a ray is a type of fish. So, you know, I'm so glad I brought this up.
We are consistent here in the greater U.S. Here.
Meanwhile, scientists had also spent a lot of time rubbing things.
Right. Aesthetic.
In order to make static, even made various generators so they could turn the crank and build up a decent static charge. It wasn't all scientists. There were a bunch of showmen doing this kind of thing. I remember bumping into one where the pretty young lady would stand on the insulated platform, get charged with electric charge, and then some unsuspecting handsome young man would be offered a kiss.
Did they turn out the lights? Because that'd be neater to look at.
Yes, I think they generally, well, would turn the wick down on the lamps and snuff the candles.
Oh, that long back. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, he leans in for a kiss and... Bang! Shocking.
Was this put on by the church?
No. These are traveling entertainers. They called themselves electricians. From the Greek word for amber, electrum.
Yeah.
In case you wanted to know where that word came from.
Well, I'm getting
this is getting much longer than I planned.
We've got down these tangents, rabbit holes.
Right. Yes. So there's a debate about whether this stuff that felt like getting shocked was actually electricity because there were no sparks.
Oh, okay.
But eventually a guy took a couple of Leyden jars.
Okay.
Which are, they hold a bit of electric energy.
Okay.
And he buried some in the sand and showed that, yes, it felt just like getting whacked by a torpedo fish.
Okay. So torpedo fish are electric. So are these Leyden jars. And
so were we.
Too.
In 1780, Luigi Galvani was doing experiments and discovered that if you apply an electrical charge to a frog muscle, you can make it jump.
Oh, wow, creepy. Okay.
Yes, he was of the opinion that there was an extra special electricity unique to living things. He's kind of influenced by his spiritual beliefs. Volta comes along and says,
Yeah.
And actually, inspired by... the torpedo fish. He stacked plates of metal separated by cardboard soaked in, I think it was brine.
Okay.
You go copper, cardboard, iron, cardboard, copper, over and over again.
Right.
And he found that he could make not only one little spark, but a continuously flowing electrical current.
Hey. Hence the name. What was it? Volta?
Hence the name Volt.
Yep.
For example, at the time they called it a voltaic pile. Nowadays we usually call them batteries. They continued looking at the link between living things and electricity by zapping various dead animals.
Okay. At least they're dead. Poor things.
Yes. It ended up being a show again. They do things like zap a dead pig and its jaws would open or its tongue would curl.
Yeah.
Then in 1751, in London, the Murder Act was passed.
Oh, goodness.
This meant that if you were condemned to be hanged...
Okay.
Your body was now available for experimentation.
Oh, goodness sakes. Before or after the hanging?
After.
Okay, thank you. At least we got that
That's
going.
That's a little better.
Right?
So this guy named Matthew Clydesdale. He was 35 years old at the time, and he, in a drunken rage, killed an 80-year-old coal miner with a pick.
Oh, goodness. Okay.
He was sentenced to be hanged and was on November 4th, 1818. He hung there for about an hour.
Okay.
And then they drained his blood and delivered him to, the lecture hall.
Okay.
Andrew Ure, how would you pronounce that? He's a Scottish chemist.
What you said.
Yes.
Yep, exactly. I'm having no luck here.
He had a 270-plate voltaic battery.
Holy crap.
And he used nitrous and sulfuric acid. I don't know what metals he was using.
Mm-hmm.
The body had several incisions put in it, in places like knees, wrists, hips, neck, to expose some nerves.
Okay.
And then he touched the rods of the battery to those nerves.
Okay.
And then For example, he had an incision on one of the fingers, and the fists had curled up. Rigor mortis was going on.
Well, all right.
So he puts the current on the finger, it straightens, and then the arm starts flopping around as if it was pointing at people in the audience.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Never mind exactly where the electrodes were put, but you could make him sit up. You could do things like make his face contort.
Okay.
Yes. Not everybody stayed for the whole show, and one gentleman fainted.
You did this to me. He was the guy getting pointed at, right?
He knows. All right, so since we're past the spooky bit here, Volt made his pile. The Voltaic pile. And once we had a source of electrical current, it ushered in a revolution in chemistry.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. Because you can do two things with electrical current. One, you can split chemical compounds into their individual chemical elements.
Cool.
And you can use electricity to put a couple of chemical elements together into specific chemical compounds.
Okay.
Yes. So that was useful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it sort of enabled the other thing that was going on, which was the beginning of photography.
Aha.
They started to find some chemicals that would react to light.
Okay.
And so you could focus an image on the plate
and
then do things later to try and get the image out of it.
Chemistry.
More happened.
What?
In the late 1800s, they discovered that you could mess with a crystal and make it act like electronic parts.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is funny. Most electronic parts had been either crazy rare resistor thingies, you know, like rubber and so forth, or conductive wire looped and turned in various ways.
Okay.
But they discovered that you could poison the crystal, so to speak.
Yes.
Put other chemicals into it. It's called doping. And get a crystal to act like any electronic component you wanted.
That's crazy. Okay.
The problem was the crystals they were using, germanium, were rare and expensive.
Is it named after the country?
I actually don't know, but it kind of sounds like it.
Right?
We are German.
We keep referencing movies.
I know, okay. Anyway. That no one else has ever seen or heard of. So the idea was, hey, maybe we could go to silicon.
Okay.
But there were problems.
Oh.
There were weird surface effects that wouldn't let the electricity into the circuits.
Oh.
There was problems with the stuff you doped it with leaking back out.
That's not good.
Also, it corroded over time.
Many issues, okay. Mm-hmm. But cheap.
Then a guy named Karl Frosch.
Aha.
He sounds German too, but he was in America at the time.
Okay.
Had an accident.
Oh, poor guy.
When you're trying to dope silicon, this is one of the issues, you have to make it hot enough to burn.
Okay.
So he was trying to set up some kind of furnace where he could dope silicon more efficiently without it catching on fire.
Okay.
His idea was to buffer the whole thing with hydrogen.
Oh.
Inside your little thing, you get nothing but hydrogen inside of it. It displaces the oxygen.
Interesting.
Yes. But one day there was a leak. And instead of just bursting into flame, which, you know, could have happened, he comes back and he pulls out his silicon wafers, and they're purple.
Well, that's not the plan.
Not the plan. Why are they purple? It's not a color. It's not a chemical. It's actually a single layer of silicon dioxide crystal over the top of the silicon.
Interesting.
Which meant that it would hold the dopants, it would not corrode, and the voltage could get in there.
Well, hot dang.
Yes, it solved all of the problems. The tricky part now is how do you dope it?
True. Well, actually, the tricky part is what just happened?
Yeah, you're not wrong. I mean, we can say it's an accident, but he was intelligent enough to realize what he had and figure out how to do it on purpose consistently.
That's a heck of a thing.
Yes, yeah. It's not easy. Since you want various components, you're going to want to be able to etch and dope things. And
you're a dope. I'm sorry.
Now I'm going to have to keep that.
I'm sorry.
Since you want to dope different parts of the silicon wafer with different chemicals,
yes,
you need to be able to temporarily remove this crystalline protective layer.
Oh, how thin is it? I mean,
it is. Oh, it's very thin. Okay. It's on the order of a wavelength. The reason it looks purple is because that's about how thick it is. The same wavelength.
It's purple.
Well, yes.
Somebody knows. Okay.
Yeah, good. Not me, but small.
Yeah.
The same techniques they've been using.
Uh-huh.
You paint this photoreactive chemical over your wafer.
Oh, okay.
Over the crystal protective layer.
Mm-hmm.
And then you put a little sort of mask over the top of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then bathe it in light.
Okay.
And then the stuff that got exposed to the light no longer protects from the acid you then bathe it in.
Okay.
Which removes small chunks of the protective layer. Now you can dope specific parts of the wafer mm-hmm. with that chemical. And then basically cook on a new protective layer.
Nice.
You know, lather, rinse, and repeat until you have all your components.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And there's another little trick that was going on. It's coming back from this whole photography thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, you can take a little slide, put it in the projector, and mm-hmm. throw it up against the wall.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You can also do that in reverse. Take some big picture, punch it through the lenses, and make it tiny.
Yes, yes.
So they started doing that to make smaller and smaller circuits that would still do the job. This was the beginning of what they call Moore's Law,
uh-huh.
where from the late 70s, all the way up until the millennium,
mm-hmm.
every year, computer capabilities doubled.
Ah, neat.
Yes. That's not the only way to make these chips, but no. That's how it got started.
Well, okay. So we've just made a CPU, right?
Yes, we have.
Made a processor.
Which is good, because this podcast would be impossible without
right.
it.
Brought to you by.
But even if I only had the one computer and it was just you and me, that doesn't get it to our listeners.
No.
Both of them.
Right.
No. So we need computers to talk to each other somehow, yes. which we're going to talk about
oh.
next time. See you then.
Bye.